people are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
It's a trend that no one likes to see. An ever-increasing number of older Americans who find themselves homeless after a lifetime of honest work and having been able to support themselves. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and on this episode of the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing, we will focus on this issue with Dr. Margot Kuchel, Principal Investigator for the HOPE Home Study. That's an acronym for Health Outcomes of People Experiencing Homelessness in Older Middle Age. We learned about Dr. Kuchel's work in an article which appeared in the Contra Costa Times late last year. The title read, Alameda County, Among the New Homeless, a Growing Number of Seniors. It focused on a cohort of older homeless adults in Oakland over 3 years. A bit of background on Dr. Kuchel. She's a professor of medicine at UCSF San Francisco General Hospital, and her research interests include the health and healthcare utilization patterns of homeless adults and other vulnerable populations. She's the co-director of the UCSF Primary Care Research Fellowship and the K-12 Partners Program, the medical director of the Tenderloin Clinical Research Center and the San Francisco General Hospital Clinical Research Center. And in your free time? Just kidding. Do you have free time? Not so much. Welcome, Dr. Kuchel.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell us about the 3-year HOPE Home study. What were you looking at, and what were some of your longer-term goals?
Sure. So we started the HOPE Home study because we were concerned about rising rates of homelessness in older Americans. We now know that in many parts of the United States, the median age of the adult homeless population is about 50. Now, 50 doesn't sound that old, but it turns out that we suspected that homeless people in their 50s and 60s would actually seem a lot older and more frailer than 50-year-olds in the general community. And so we set out to do the HOPE Home study with a couple of goals. One goal was to try to understand how people wound up homeless in their 50s and 60s, to answer the question, are these individuals who've been homeless their entire adult lives? Are these people who became homeless recently? And if so, were there any points where an intervention could have been done to prevent them becoming homeless? We were also really interested in what their health status was, with a particular attention paid to what we call geriatric conditions, things like cognitive impairment, difficulty walking, falls, other things that are usually associated with older age. And finally, we were interested in how these older homeless adults use the healthcare system, how they use the emergency department, hospitalizations, if they were likely to wind up in skilled nursing facilities, which while skilled nursing facilities are certainly better than staying on the streets, as doctors for older adults, we often hope to keep them in the community as long as possible and living as independently as possible. So those were some of our goals for doing the study.
Were you pretty surprised by the results?
So far, we've had a few surprising findings, or at least results that surprised me. One is that we found that over 40% of our participants were never homeless until they were in their 50s. And for many, either their 50s or their 60s, they experienced homelessness for the first time. An additional 20% were never homeless until they were in their 40s. So these are, for the most part, not individuals who spent their entire adult lives homeless, but instead, for many of them, were people who spent their whole adult lives working, living in the community, and until something happened in later life where they lost their housing and wound up on the streets. We've also found, perhaps not surprisingly to us, but I think it's still pretty surprising, very high rates of things like cognitive impairment or difficulty remembering or thinking through tasks. We found really high rates of difficulty walking, falls. In short, these individuals who are mostly, our participants are mostly in their 50s and 60s, look much more like 70 and 80-year-olds in terms of their health.
So the question that begs is, did that happen to them as a result of being homeless, or did that premature aging, if you will, contribute to them becoming homeless?
I think in many ways that's the million-dollar question here. And I think the answer is probably both. We're finding that a lot of people express to us that one of the precipitants, one of the reasons why they lost their housing was actually because they started to have health problems. Our participants, for the most part, worked in lower wage physical labor. A lot of them did either unskilled or semi-skilled labor. These are hard physical jobs. And a lot of them had not had great access to healthcare throughout their lives and had not had great opportunities to take great care of their health. And they found themselves, as they hit their 50s and 60s, harder and harder to keep up in these very physical jobs at the same time as the economy was in a recession and housing prices kept going up. And so there's no question in my mind that some of these health problems led to the loss of housing. But what's also very clear is that when people hit the streets, their health really goes down. And so people have talked to us very poignantly about problems that were smaller problems becoming much bigger problems when they were homeless.
That makes sense. Have you seen public perceptions about homelessness being overturned as a result of some of your research?
I mean, I think the perception that our research might help overturn is a few. One is that these older adults who we see on the street have spent their whole lives homeless. Again, it is true for some of our participants have actually spent very, very many years living on the streets after very difficult childhoods and difficult times sort of engaging with the mainstream society. But I think it's important to note that a really large proportion of them, as many as half, lived like many of us. They worked hard. They lived in their community. They kind of did everything that we've asked them to do until the rug was pulled out of them at older age. I think a couple other misperceptions. One is that everybody who's homeless has a severe mental health problem or a severe substance use problem. That just isn't the case. We definitely find higher rates of mental health disabilities and substance use problems than there are in the general population, but there are many individuals on the street who their homelessness was not precipitated by those disabilities. And I think finally, I hear people say often, well, a lot of these individuals don't want to be housed. And I think that's just not true. And we've certainly found that to be not true. I think that some of them have pretty significant disabilities that mean they might require some more support to be housed. But many others don't, and they desperately want to be housed, but they also face a lot of stigma and shame for being homeless, and it's made it even harder for them to reach out for help. And the fact is that there isn't right now adequate housing for all those who need it.
Sure.
A few other things that maybe we found. I hear people say often, oh, people move to the Bay Area to be homeless because it's such a great place to be homeless. It's warm, there are good policies, and we have not found that to be true. The vast majority of our participants spent their entire lives in the Bay Area. And finally, this idea that everyone who's on the street is completely socially isolated. And we found actually remarkably high rates of our participants being connected to their family and connected to the community. There's no doubt that as time passes and more time people spend on the street, it's disorienting and they lose some of those ties. But we do actually see quite a bit of connection to family.
I would think there are probably hundreds, if not thousands, of people who are relying on their families moving in with other family members. And that's keeping them from homelessness. So I'm wondering if a significant percentage of these folks just don't have children or don't have family members whom they can move in with.
So that's a great question and something that we're very interested in. And it does seem that there are a large portion of our participants who do have family members, whether it is children, siblings, and in some cases, parents and aunts and uncles. We find that for a relatively large proportion of our participants spend a few nights a month or even more than that living or staying with their friends and family. And one of the things we're very interested in is, could that be converted to a permanent solution? It's actually something that we're going to start looking at in a formal way soon. When we ask our participants, many of them express shame, that they say these are mostly men and they say they don't want to have to rely on their child. That's not their child's job. And so they don't want to impose on their children. We're also hearing people tell us really terrible stories of they want to live with their child or their niece or their brother, and that person wants them to live there, but that person can't take them in because of restrictions on the house person's lease in their housing situation. And others certainly have families who really do want to take them in, but they're also struggling and just don't really have the money to have it or space or resources to take in another family member.
Dr. Kushal, your research involves in-depth interviews, follow-ups, monthly check-ins with your subjects. We believe that anecdotes speak really well to flesh out a story. Can you relate a particular story or a couple of stories that put a face on homelessness for our listeners?
Sure. I mean, I'm thinking of one gentleman who grew up in the Bay Area, never married, had a few significant relationships, and always worked, and worked very, very hard. Had a relatively good paying job in the sales field and worked many, many hours a week and lived with a roommate as a way to cut costs, but his own housing costs continued to be $900 a month despite the fact that he was sharing a relatively modest apartment. The business that he worked for got sold to a larger company. And slowly the number of people who worked for it was cut down and down and down. And actually his hours went up and up and his work was sort of increasingly challenging as he was driving much larger areas. And as he was doing this, people who his coworkers were laid off one by one until he was one of the last two people still working. Eventually, his hours were cut to 20 hours a week, and while they did that, his pay was also cut to $9 an hour until he could no longer afford his rent. I think what was really poignant about the story was this gentleman moved into his car and continued to work while living in the car until eventually it all just became too difficult. The hours dwindled to nothing, and he wound up in the shelter system. I think that's really a telling story of how it is to try to make a way as an older adult in an environment where we just came through a big recession. There was a lot of job loss and job consolidation, and the housing prices are just extraordinarily
high. It's really
high.
A perfect storm.
It was certainly a perfect storm. You know, we've also heard stories of people who lived incredibly difficult lives. We have individuals who talk in great depth about experiences of abuse and neglect when they were children, many with some very harrowing early life experiences that really made it difficult for them to get a firm foothold in regular employment. And so they may have been working, but the work life may have been interrupted. Many of them developed substance use or mental health problems. And so that we certainly also have stories of that, people living with significant disabilities. I think another story that really moved me was of a woman who wound up on the streets and was absolutely terrified and came up with a strategy to stay safe, where there was one or two AC bus drivers who let her stay on their bus at night, and she would ride the buses all night long and basically ride a bus driver's entire route because it's a way to keep safe, because that bus driver would keep an eye on this very vulnerable woman who otherwise was living on the streets in total terror.
The New York Times did a story about a bus in Palo Alto, I believe.
Yes.
It was, and there was a video to go with that, which was stunning.
Yes. That is a really stunning piece. And it was interesting because we had been talking about this woman. And as she told us her story, as we recruited more and more participants, it was a story that we heard from several different people of this resourcefulness. I thought of, in many ways, the kindness of the bus drivers who allowed them to do it. But I think it all just brings home how just terrifying it is to be on the streets, and that people are really trying to do what they can do to stay safe. And they're really afraid, you know, they're very afraid on the streets. And so I think that bus story, when we saw it in the op-eds in the New York Times, really hit us because it resonated with so many of the stories we heard.
There's plenty of documentation that health and housing are closely interrelated. Your research delves deeper into that linkage by really looking at the health of older adults who don't have a safe and secure home. Can you share some of your findings with us and tell us what we can learn about the healthcare costs to our communities?
Sure. I think this is a really important issue. I think as the homeless population ages, we're seeing people with multiple chronic conditions being forced to live on the street. And we've known for quite some time that homelessness is absolutely devastating to health. As a physician, you know, one of the main trends in healthcare over the last 20 or 30 years has been to move things to lower levels of care. So we, you know, the rise of day surgery. So we do a lot of things, and we take care of a lot of problems in the outpatient setting that maybe 30 years ago we would have taken care of as inpatients. Unfortunately, for people who are homeless, this is not possible to do. And so what we find in our participants are really, really high rates of poorly controlled chronic diseases, things like diabetes, hypertension, HIV. A surprising number of individuals are living on the streets with a cancer diagnosis. And what we find, not surprisingly, is it's very difficult for them to access the type of coordinated longitudinal outpatient care that keeps people in relatively good health with those problems. And so what might have been a very controllable disease suddenly becomes out of control and leads to a lot of problems. We're also seeing very high rates of what we call geriatric conditions, things that are usually associated with aging, things like cognitive impairment, falling, difficulty walking. And so we're seeing very high rates of these functional impairments. And so perhaps it's not surprising that our individuals, our participants, have a hard time getting into care. And so while over half of them have a regular doctor, they often don't get to that regular doctor or nurse practitioner very often because they don't have any way of getting there. They don't have a telephone to make an appointment. And so what results is people relying on emergency care, things like the emergency department and hospital care. We're seeing incredibly high rates of emergency department use and hospital,
which is far more expensive,
almost
right?
Much, much more expensive. And so we see people being, you know, developing problems that could have been controlled, and because they're not caught early, they wind up being hospitalized for them. We also know that we admit people for problems when they're homeless that we would never admit them to hospital if they weren't homeless. And then once they get in the hospital, they stay there longer. And so in a sense, we're all paying the cost where, you know, hospitals are not a very efficient place to house people. So this is a population that is having very poor outcomes, living these very difficult lives on the street, and yet we're all paying the healthcare costs of them doing so. I think the other thing we're worried about is we found, as we follow up, a surprising number of our participants at the 6 or 12-month follow-up interview are now living in a skilled nursing facility or a nursing home. Now, you can say that a nursing home is a better place to live than the street, which it certainly is, but I think we like to think of older adults as being able to stay in the community as long as possible, as long as they can be supported there, because not only does it potentially provide more independence, but it's frankly also a lot cheaper. And so I do think that we are all paying the price of having older adults living on the street.
What systems need to be put in place or strengthened in order to lead to better health and quality of life outcomes?
I mean, first and foremost, we need more affordable housing. For a lot of our participants, the thing that caused them to lose their housing was they could simply not afford to live where they lived, and they could not find another place that they could afford. I think we need better protections for people who are no longer able to do the type of physical work than they could do when they were younger. And I think, you know, we ask people a lot of questions about the last year they were housed, and it's hard not to see multiple opportunities where something could have been done, where had they had access to perhaps, you know, someone who could have helped them navigate the legal system and what their rights were as tenants, someone who maybe wound up on the streets for lack of a relatively small amount of money that would have allowed them to pay a back rent and stay in their housing. And so I think all of those things are real opportunities. The other thing we're seeing is, you know, we are hearing from our participants that one of the reasons they're not living with family is because they might not be on the lease. And so we need more protections and solutions to allow people who could potentially stay with their families to actually do that.
Where can people delve more deeply into the study and its findings? Is it available?
You know, we are starting. We are starting to publish our results, and we'll have more of these results out hopefully in the next few months. That we will try to make your study results as widely available as possible.
And should people check out your website?
They certainly can. They can look me up on the UCSF website, and they can just look up my profile, and as things get come out, they can find them there.
Dr. Kushal, thanks so much for your time and for your insights today and for the work that you do.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dr. Margot Kushal, professor of medicine at UCSF San Francisco General Hospital, co-director of the UCSF Primary Care Research Fellowship and the K-12 Partners Program, medical director of the Tenderloin Clinical Research Center and the San Francisco General Hospital Clinical Research Center, as well as principal investigator on the Hope Home study. I'm Joanne Green. To hear prior episodes of the Affordable Housing Podcast or to subscribe, please visit us at edenhousing.org.
SmarterPodcasts.com, delivering sound advice.